Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
World Without Love, first big hit for Pier and Gordon, and one of their million sellers, you know, Woman, I Go to Pieces. Peter Asher joins us now, and after his singing career, he went on to be a producer, very successful manager, and still performs, writes books, does Beatles shows on satellite radio, and is coming to town for Beatlefest. Peter, good to hook up with you again.
Good to be here. Thanks, Bob.
And let's talk a little bit about that song, World Without Love. It was written by Paul and John, right? And John didn't like it. Is that why you ended up with it?
Pretty much, yes. I think Paul wrote it pretty much on his own. He wrote it a couple of years before I heard it. I mean, the part of it, anyway. He'd written the verse, and I'd overheard it during the time that he was, you know, living in our house in London, and liked it. But yes, apparently John didn't think much of it when Paul played it to him. John thought the opening line was a ridiculous lyric, "Please lock me away," and he would interrupt Paul and go, "Okay, I will lock you away. The song's over." So it was clear that it didn't have a future as a Beatles song. So when Gordon and I got our record deal, I asked him if we could have it, and in what turned out to be a life-changingly generous decision, he said yes again.
And you mentioned Paul was staying at your house. That's because he was dating your sister, Jane. And now I have read this. I don't know if it's true that Jane inspired many songs like "All My Lovin'" and "I Love Her," "I'm Looking Through You," "You Won't See Me," "We Can Work It Out," "Here, There, and Everywhere," "For No One." Is that true?
I would certainly imagine. I mean, that's, you know, when you write love, if you have a girlfriend and you're in love and you write love songs, you know, that clearly they are part of the inspiration. But in terms of specific songs or anything, no, I'm not, you know, I don't know. But did I actually ask him then? Certainly not. But it seems logical to me to assume that was the case, yes.
I never get tired of hearing your story about "I Want to Hold Your Hand." Could you tell that?
Sure. Well, when Paul moved in, he was in the guest room on the top floor of the house, which is next to my bedroom. But there was also in the basement, there was a little music room, practice room, really, very small room with a small upright piano in it. And my mom had told him that he was welcome to use that piano because she had previously used the room to give private oboe lessons, but wasn't at that time. So she said, "Look, if you need a piano, that room is not used much, hardly at all. So feel free." And I do remember that particular day that John Lennon came over, and he and Paul were down in that basement room for a couple of hours or so. And Paul eventually called upstairs and asked me if I wanted to come down and hear the song they had just finished, which, of course, I was delighted and excited to do. So I came down and sat on this little two-person sofa opposite the piano, and they sat side by side on the piano bench. Interestingly, there were no guitars involved at that stage at all, and they were both hammering away loud and hard on the piano and sang this brand new song called "I Want to Hold Your Hand," and asked me what I thought of it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Did you like it right away?
I did. I did. And the key, of course, is not only do you tell them how good it is, but you ask them to play it again. Uh-huh. And that's, of course, when you know you've got a hit record, you know, like when you used to drag the needle back to the first groove again and again till you knew it by heart. Mm-hmm. And equally, they were delighted to play it again.
When the Beatles manager, Brian Epstein, went into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you inducted him. You also inducted the Rolling Stones manager, Andrew Oldham. Mm-hmm. A couple of questions about those two. First of all, how well did you know Brian?
Well, not really well, but I mean, I spent quite a bit of time with him, you know, on specific occasions. I was always impressed by him, by his style and kind of, you know, he was elegant and he believed so firmly in the Beatles. So I learned a lot about management from watching Brian, certainly. And he was articulate and smart and a believer. And that's when I realized that, you know, being a manager, the most important thing was where, you know, was being honest and straightforward, and having an infinite belief in the artist you were telling people about, so that when he would go around and say they're going to be bigger than Elvis, people would eventually not laugh at him, you know, because it was clear that he meant it, mm-hmm. and nobody believed it could be true, but of course it was.
Well,
so when I found James Taylor, I felt the same way. I just thought this was some of the best music I'd ever heard, and you know, I had never managed anyone before, but I figured, you know, Brian, it was an inspiration to me in that regard.
And then you went on to also manage Linda Ronstadt, right?
Yes, indeed.
What would have been different with the Beatles' career, do you think? How would things have changed had Brian lived?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. You know, there's so many of those what-ifs, and you know, I just don't know. It's an interesting question, but I don't think it's an answerable one. You know?
Yeah, because things seem to fall.
It gives you a lot to think about, for sure.
Yeah, things seem to fall apart or go in too many different directions after his passing.
Yes, and they might have a bit anyway, because of course, you know, with success comes a degree of autonomy that you don't have when you're starting. I mean, at the beginning of the career, when Brian said you're going to wear these suits and do this and do that and the other, they were all kind of yes, sir, and that changes, of course.
Yeah.
As the artist realizes that they have the power to say, no, I don't think that's right. We're going to do something different. Or, you know, or to actually say, maybe I don't want to be in this band full time. I've got so many other things I'd like to try. And that tends to happen with or without management. But I think Brian would have, first of all, they wouldn't have gone through the episode of tremendous sadness that they did when he died.
Sure.
And secondly, I think he would have probably worked out things in a smoother way, you know. Mm-hmm. It might have avoided some of the extreme confrontations that happened about, you know, who people mm-hmm. actually sort of storming out of the band and stuff like that. But he would have worried a lot about that, for sure.
It's interesting that Brian is so famous, that name Brian Epstein, but yet Andrew Oldham, who managed the Stones, you don't hear a lot about him. Is that because Mick Jagger kind of really took the reins of everything?
Yes, and of course, you know, Andrew wasn't their manager for that long, but he was at the beginning, and he was vital in you know, determining the identity of the band right there at the beginning. He deliberately wanted them to be the bad boys of rock and roll, where the Beatles were the good boys, you know.
Right.
The mums liked the Beatles, you know, whereas daughters who'd had enough of doing what their parents told them liked the Stones. So mm-hmm. He positioned them that way deliberately, which was incredibly smart.
Good to talk to you again, Peter. Stay healthy.
Great to talk to you. Thank you so much for calling.
Peter Asher just got his fifth Grammy, a special merit award.